And good afternoon and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the just barely ran in on time Patty Fink and Laron Landis. Our guest today is Aaron Morris. He's the legal director of Immigration Equality. He's going to be calling in at about 1:30, and we'll talk to him about immigration issues and how that changed over the last year. Until then, we have lots to talk about. This week, the Fifth Circuit will be hearing cases from Louisiana, Mississippi, and Texas. Tuesday, Florida becomes marriage equality state number sort of 36. And the reason I say sort of is because we have some odd situations in a couple of states like Missouri, where you can only get married in St. Louis, but statewide they'll recognize marriages performed elsewhere.
But not in Missouri.
But not in Missouri, right? Well, they'll recognize marriages from St. Louis. But they don't have statewide marriage equality. In Kansas, where they're issuing marriage licenses because the court said that you have to issue marriage licenses. Oh, we have to recognize those marriages too? Well, they're just not recognizing them. And that's kind of the situation that Florida is trying to create for itself, although a district judge this week, a U.S. district judge, has issued a new ruling. And in his ruling, he basically warned these county clerks and others that, it's not just that you have to do this or that maybe you should consider doing this. If you don't, not only are you out of compliance with the law, but you're going to be held financially responsible personally for any damages and legal fees that anybody incurs trying to get that marriage license that you have to issue. I think that's fair.
I think that's fair, too.
What the other thing that's going on in Florida that I kind of find kind of entertaining is some of these county clerks who don't want to issue marriage licenses, what they said was, well, we'll issue the license because now they've been ordered to and they really don't want to be held financially responsible. And I have nothing against them having asked for a clarification because of a specific memo. We'll talk about that in a minute. But now what they've done in a number of counties is they've said, we're not going to perform weddings in our county courthouses.
Here's a quote from one of the heads of the Duval County clerks. He says, it was decided as a team, as an office, that this would this is what we would do so there wouldn't be any discrimination. The easiest way is not to do them at all. I believe marriage is between a man and a woman. Personally, it would go against my beliefs to perform a ceremony that is other than that. So you mean to tell me you look at every single marriage that comes in your application that comes through your office and you scan it and judge it and like, okay, that meets my standard of religion or whatever?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Give me a break.
Yes, that's what they do. You didn't realize that was their job?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty scary.
And I'm actually really, you know, I used to work for the government. I am really surprised that an office has that kind of power just to say, I'm not going to do anything.
They don't.
I'm not going to issue any marriage licenses. How are they?
No, they're going to issue the marriage licenses now. They're just not going to perform weddings at all.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, they're going to issue marriage licenses because Judge Henkel, the federal judge, told them that they have to.
They just won't officiate.
Okay, so here's the other thing that went on there.
It's crazy.
A law firm, let's see, where is that one? Because I know I have that story. A law firm issued a fake advisory to county clerks. Now, Judge Henkel, in his January 1st decision, on New Year's Day, he was that pissed that he issued a ruling on New Year's Day. He called what they did unscrupulous. I'd like to see these attorneys' licenses challenged. I think he would, too. But this law firm issued a memorandum to all county clerks that Hinkle's ruling only applies to the couple that sued and to the county clerk who was instructed to marry them, that this ruling doesn't apply to anybody else. Because
was this to the first ruling or to the clarification from
to the first ruling? To the first ruling. That's why he issued this second ruling. The original ruling, when you rule on a case, let's say Laron, you and Danny had sued, and Henkel said, no, due process. And it was a very clear ruling. Mm-hmm. It violates your due process, your equal protection under the law. But this law firm was saying, yes, but that's only that couple.
Patty and Aaron couldn't get married.
Patty and Aaron doesn't violate yours because you didn't sue. Now, a lawsuit is only that narrow when the court itself says in the ruling that this ruling cannot apply to anybody else. The famous one is Bush v. Gore.
Yeah, I was supposed to say Bush v. Gore was the most famous.
Yeah, right. Where they said,
like, this is not a precedent. You know, this is not to be ruled, you know, like, looked back upon as some sort of standard.
Mm-hmm. Right. And every time a marriage ruling has happened, like the Virginia ruling, well, West Virginia complied, North Carolina complied, but South Carolina didn't want to comply because it doesn't apply to us. It only applied to Virginia, not our law, which is worded exactly the same. Not our law. That was their law. Well, no.
Idaho did it too.
Idaho's the other one. Yeah. It's not. It's only not precedent when you say it's not precedent in this kind of case. So,
it's just nuts.
Yeah. So anyway. So.
But wait, one more thing with Florida, and another crazy situation. So yes, Tuesday they will. You're right. Sort of become the 36th state, because we still have to remember the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals still hadn't heard the challenge.
No.
And I don't see how they would or why they would, but they could, in fact, rule against us. So that would make – I don't know. What would they do? Would that invalidate all those marriages?
Well, but actually they can't, because they did hear the case in saying, no, we're not going to impose an injunction. And so it went to the Supreme Court, and Clarence Thomas said he wasn't going to impose an injunction or stay the ruling. So in a way it has gone to them.
That was just for the state, right?
For the state of Florida.
Yeah, but they still haven't heard of the actual case.
They have not heard. They have not heard the case.
Right. So when
they've apparently, by not staying it though, they've sort of declined to hear the case. A court is allowed to do that.
You're right. But
you know, it's kind of like when they wanted to sue the attorney general in Oregon. The attorney general in Oregon was saying, the lower court has ruled, we'll comply. A state doesn't have an obligation to appeal every single ruling. A lower court, otherwise there'd be no point in lower courts.
Right.
A lower court can rule, and both parties can say, okay, we agree with that, and it's settled. You don't have to appeal everything.
I wonder if the 11th Court will just throw it out.
They sort of have done that. I mean...
Not yet. But
and two other states in that circuit, Georgia and Alabama, haven't had cases heard yet, but they will. And we'll see what they say in those. But they didn't really seem – the 11th Circuit was not anxious to hear this case.
No.
And they weren't worried about the ramifications of Florida starting to have marriage equality, because Judge Hinkle stayed himself – and I like the way he stayed. He stayed until January 5th. He said, you have a chance to appeal. And otherwise, it expires on January 5th. I like that. It's not stayed forever. It's stayed for you to give you time to appeal. Nobody's wanted to hear this case. So they have marriage.
On the 6th, on Tuesday.
On Tuesday.
Bright and early Tuesday.
And that's when... straight people won't be able to get married in certain counties because that's the part that I love.
Well, not by the office.
Not by the office. They won't be able to get married in a county courthouse.
Right. Yeah.
And a few. Not all of them.
It's more than a few. It's a number of them. But I like that because it inconveniences straight people the same way, in an equal way, that it's inconveniencing gay people.
That's such a 5-year-old temper tantrum thing.
It is. It really is.
It really is. Like, oh, well, I'm just not going to do anything, you know.
I'm going to take all my balls home and
exactly.
go home.
Exactly. Rather than just play by the rules, mm-hmm. you know. Well. But oh well.
Well, but let them.
Yeah, let them.
Let them.
As long as they're treating them all equally, fine.
Yeah, Patty, before you got here, what we were saying is you should probably rent some space in a storefront right near one of the courthouses. You could do land office business, charge $100. You could do, I don't know, 20, 30 in a day.
Yeah.
Patty, this could be your ticket. This could be your ticket to retirement, early retirement.
Oh, it could. It could, I guess. Wouldn't I want to be closer to Key West?
Well, no, but they're marrying people. You want to be in one of the more conservative
right, right.
counties.
That's true. Right.
With
I'm
a
just
big
thinking more customers, you
right,
know.
Right.
Yeah, but the county.
And I would marry straight people. I'd let.
Well, sure.
Yeah, of course. Why not?
Well, all welcome.
You should do exactly like they're doing, not discriminate.
Mm-hmm.
Gay or straight, can't get married in the courthouse. Gay or straight, can get married at Patty's.
But if that minister comes up to me with his horse, not going to do it. Not going to do it.
And I understand.
I wouldn't do that to the horse.
Well, you'd want a signature from both the bride and groom on the wedding certificate.
And the hoof, I'm sorry, it just doesn't do it.
Doesn't cut it.
So, but that, you're right, it could be quite lucrative.
We'll have to look into that. We have till Tuesday.
Can you do this nationally in any state?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah, you should definitely.
I don't know though that Texas would. I don't know. I haven't investigated qualifications in Texas.
Okay.
I haven't been asked to.
So you're legal in every state. What, for anybody who doesn't know, Patty had applied for her license. Is it?
Well, it's a certification. I'm ordained in the American. I can't remember the precise name of my church. But I was able to conduct my cousin's wedding in California.
Right.
Because in California, anyone can, I mean, you don't even need to be, you know, credentialed in any way. Anyone can perform a marriage, you know, so, which is great because it was really meaningful for all of us.
One of my straight friends has his credentials here, too. He does the same thing that you do. So, I mean, it's possible in Texas.
It's possible.
Yeah. I don't know what all you have to go through.
The difference might be that she has to register something
with
the state.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you need to do that because Texas is going to have marriage pretty soon.
It's coming soon.
Yeah.
So you need to get it registered and make sure that you're qualified.
Now, one of the things we talked about last week was that the Robichaud case in Louisiana, it is the same case in the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
So it's simultaneously at 9 a.m. I guess 9 a.m. East Coast would make it 8 a.m. at the Supreme Court in their conference. This is not a trial situation. It's the nine justices alone with no clerks, no anybody, closed doors meeting, deciding whether they're going to take a case or not. So it's appealed up to the Supreme Court. Meanwhile, case is going to be heard before the Fifth Circuit at 9 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Central time.
And what it is that case was appealed by the plaintiffs to the Fifth Circuit, but the state itself appealed the case to the Supreme Court somehow with some legal maneuver skipping the Fifth Circuit.
I believe the motivation is they want a ruling before the Fifth Circuit makes a ruling. So, and I don't know whether it was Lambda Legal or... because I know Lambda Legal's on that case, I believe.
Yeah, Lambda Legal appealed to the Fifth Circuit.
Yeah.
Because they're the plaintiffs in that case. But it was the state that appealed to the higher court. So the Fifth Circuit is meeting. You're going.
Yeah, we're going to go on Friday.
What do you expect? What's the day like for you to go and hear a case in front of the Fifth Circuit?
Well, we're going to go and land about 7:30. So we've got to beeline it over to the courthouse. But a friend of Aaron's, who's an attorney there and had worked, had clerked for a federal judge there, said she learned from some of her friends in the courthouse that staff had gotten two tickets each. So she's kind of bummed because she doesn't think she's going to be able to get in. But we're going to go and take our chances, you know, and see what happens. So we may not get in at all.
There's an overflow room that they're planning on using.
We're hoping that, and it's been done in the past. So we're hoping they do it again, obviously.
Okay.
But, you know, it could be, too, that, you know, Louisiana goes first at 9 a.m., and then at 10 a.m., and typically there are no breaks, so at 10 a.m. will be Mississippi, and then at 11 a.m. will be Texas. And maybe some of those folks will give up their seats to free it
Surely
up.
So.
You know, as each state kind of cycles through, so that we can get inside for the Texas.
Since it takes place in New Orleans, more people from Louisiana would be there and have the interest in the local case.
Right, and so the Louisiana case is first, but they might not stick around for all the others. So we're hoping that someone will give up their seats if there's not an overflow room. Mm-hmm. But then it's my understanding, too, that there's going to be a rally afterward in the court. There's a courtyard right there. Our courtyard. It's the yard of the court right there. afterward, so after all the cases are heard. So that'll be kind of fun. I think Lambda Legal's putting that on. So
so at least you'll be able to get some firsthand information from some of the people who were in the courtroom about
absolutely.
What the questions were, what the temperament of the judges was toward each side.
Oh, yeah. We plan to, like, you know, tell us everything. Give it all up. You know, we want to hear everything.
And just because judges are asking certain questions, here's what I've heard about the judges. Two of them were appointed by Reagan, one of them by Obama. So the Obama one, he's had several liberal rulings within or dissenting opinions within the Fifth Circuit. He's fairly new on the court. Two of them are Reagan appointees.
One is from Dallas.
One of them is from Dallas. He's kind of the swing vote. The other one is considered very, very conservative. You know, the abortion ruling, the one where Wendy Davis had filibustered. Thank you. Had filibustered, and there was special session, got passed anyway, and then it went to the court. He voted that it's okay for these special rules that close down those abortion clinics. He's expected to be anti-gay marriage. The other one, though, is kind of a swing vote. He has senior status, meaning that he's semi-retired. He's a judge that remember Robert Bork, when he was turned down by the court? Higginbotham, who's this judge from Dallas, he was considered one of the top choices to replace Bork. Reagan was so pissed off about Bork that he wasn't going to have anybody tell him who he was going to appoint, and he appointed Kennedy instead. Good choice, yeah. I mean, as far as... but Higginbotham...
And he has a reputation for basically...
independence.
Yeah, he's pissed off the right and the left.
Right.
Over time.
And more recently, the right. But being semi-retired, earlier he was considered a good choice for even higher... court for a higher position. He's in his 70s now. He's not going to be appointed to any higher position. He can do what he thinks is right, not just what is politically expedient or trying to get this higher court position. So he could very well say, you know, it's not what I'd traditionally be for, but these arguments on the one side are idiotic, and arguments on the other side, we are talking equality, we're talking due process, he might just vote for equality.
Well, and even if he feels that way, he might vote against it. Of course, all he has to do is sign one of the other two's opinions.
Right.
And he doesn't have to say so himself.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He just concurs, you know, with an opinion. But he could, you know, support us and say, let's just get this done. I'm gonna rule against this and have it go to the Supreme Court, and they decide.
He really is a swing. Could go either way.
I'm interested to see how fast they're going to rule, however they're going to rule, how fast it's going to come down, because all the other ones have come down fairly quick.
And the reason for them not to rule at all, and that's a very good possibility, is if the Supreme Court that day decides to take one of the Sixth Circuit cases or the Louisiana case or even now the Idaho case, If they decide to take one of those cases, they could say, you know what, we could start writing 75 pages worth of stuff. Why bother? We're either going to get just reaffirmed or overturned. Who wants to be overturned? Nobody. No judge wants that. And just to be reaffirmed, unless we have something new to say, and by now they don't, why bother?
But that's only for the Louisiana case. I think they would probably legally be legally bound to rule on the Mississippi case and the Texas case.
But they don't have a time limit to do it, and we need to take a break. But they don't have a time limit where they have to do it. And so since they don't have to do it within a certain period of time, they might just wait.
Sure.
Supreme Court's going to hear it, and then the case becomes moot. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with LaRon Landis and the almost late Patty Fink.
This is Lewis from UT Arlington, and I listen to Lambda Weekly podcasts at lambdaweekly.com.
And this is Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with LaRon Landis and the late Patty Fink. Aaron Morris, who's the legal director from Immigration Equality, should be joining us in about 10 minutes or so. We'll just keep chatting until he calls in. He was at a meeting this weekend and possibility he won't be able to get away from it to call into the show. And if so, we'll have him on a different time.
But I thought you said Aaron Moore for a moment.
No, Aaron, not Aaron Morris. Moore. Aaron Morris. the arguments that you're expecting to hear at the Fifth Circuit. The arguments against.
You know, I think what they're going to do is try to show some sort of compelling state interest. And I just don't think that's going to fly. I just think that's been shot down so many times.
Well, it's been shot down so many times, but this is Texas, so we do have a compelling state interest, don't we?
According to Abbott.
Well, what about people burying their toasters?
Well, the toaster cannot give consent.
You know, that's the argument against it. And the other argument is that's not the question before the court. And courts really, I'm surprised they haven't shot this down before, because that's the argument that they give. It's a slippery slope. It could lead to blah, 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 blah. People want to marry their horse. That stupid straight pastor from Mississippi who dressed his horse in a wedding dress and dragged the horse to the county town or to the county square. I want to marry my horse. Well, so you file a lawsuit so that you can marry your horse. That's not the question before the court, and it's not what the court decided. The court was talking about two consenting adults. That really hasn't been shot down anywhere, has it? That I know of.
What? As the rationale to
marry? As the rationale that it's a slippery slope.
No, but you know what? While we're talking about that, it's a big pet peeve of mine, because I think that straight people created the slippery slope.
Okay.
They started getting married, and then other people wanted to get married. And then, you know, so if someone wants to marry their box turtle, I think it's straight people's fault. They started this. they wanted to be with another person for the rest of their lives. And
that's my argument, though, that the guy who wanted to marry his horse, even though it was tongue-in-cheek or whatever else, satire or just whatever, making his point, that's a straight person saying that he wanted to do that. I don't know any gay people who are saying
exactly.
They want to marry their toaster.
Exactly.
Exactly. And John Cornyn was all about the box turtle. I don't know anyone who even knows a box turtle, much less wants to marry one.
Or even knows exactly what a box turtle is, as opposed to a tortoise or a...
Right. Well, you know, one of their main arguments is, and for the longest time, it was for procreation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, another argument is that it will end, letting us get married will end their marriages. How?
Well, but that argument has been shot down in the courts by in sane and rational decisions.
Of course.
And judges have clearly said there is absolutely no evidence, there's no way in which it does. Idaho, their argument is better than everybody else. So the governor, Butch Otter, he said, no, you have to hear ours because we're the state that's defended this the strongest. And so you have to hear it from a state that's defended it as opposed to a state that's capitulated. Right? Okay. Here's his argument. Children are better off in a household with a mother and a father. Now,
we've done this before.
Well,
we've done that.
However, in a court decision, I don't know that it's been defended. And the argument that he's using, well, all of the studies show, and this is not something I think most gay people are even comfortable saying, but all the studies show that when you have equal gay parents and equal straight parents, in other words, you take out all of the parents who got knocked up as teens, you take all of the parents who were unmarried, but you have two parent straight parents and two-parent gay parents, the gay parents still come out ahead as better parents. I really think most gay people, I know I'm a little bit uncomfortable saying that because, maybe you didn't look at all the right parents because parenting is so individual,
mm-hmm.
Right?
And I mean, as a gay parent, I kind of winced to say that also.
Of course.
Because
but
I just don't want to paint a whole group of people the same way.
But every time they actually do study it, and the most recent ones really have done a good job of when you take all the straight parents and all the gay parents have to work a lot harder to become parents, they come out way ahead. But
there aren't a lot of shotgun gay weddings.
There,
no.
But even when you have equal parents, like parents who are over 25 years old, parents who are about economically the same level, the gay parents still come out ahead. So stop arguing that, because you're going to lose. It's just a bad argument for him. So I want him to take that argument to court.
But the whole idea of that procreation is the state's compelling interest, mm-hmm, has been shot down over and over and over.
It has.
Because, you know, we allow, you know, straight people who are 80 to marry. Mm-hmm. They're not having kids.
I mean, infertile couples.
Infertile couples. The state doesn't compel.
You don't have to take a fertility test before you get married.
Right. So, I mean, and Abbott's really trying to say that, you know, straight people provide the example, and therefore childless couples look to childful couples, I guess, you know, like for the ideal, the, you know, how it should be done. And that's just crap too. That's been shot down, and it's doesn't even make sense. None of it really makes sense. But you don't want to say my honor kid's better than your honor kid. You don't have a bumper sticker.
No. It's just not us.
She's still first grade.
Yeah.
It'll come.
I mean, I'll gladly stick a bumper sticker on there since my kid's an honor student or whatever, but I don't want to try and lift myself up to put somebody else down now.
I think you should. but like you said, you wince when you say it. But the studies have shown, every study after study, every reputable study, there's that Regnera study from UT, which was so slanted that it wasn't comparing apples to apples at all. It was comparing
apples to hammers.
Something really like that. It was such a bad study. But every other legitimate study shows, really, that gay parents and straight parents, when they're comparable, make comparable parents. Mm-hmm. And so don't argue that. Stop arguing that, because the science shows that we win, actually, because if anything, we come out ahead.
Right. Well, another problem with that argument is not everybody wants to have children. Just because you get married, that doesn't mean you want to have children. And with gay and lesbian couples, we have been able to legally adopt in a lot of states, mm-hmm, without getting married.
And a lot of gay people are parents of their own children from previous relationships.
Exactly. So, I mean,
I think we have Aaron on the phone. Is that, that's not? Okay, from Immigration Equality. And, we have an announcement. I forgot to read it at 20 after. Tickets are on sale now for the Red Hot and Blue 16th Annual KNON Blues Festival, Saturday, January 17th and Sunday, January 18th. It's one of the biggest events that KNON puts on every year. It's one of the most fun events. We're moving it to a bigger room this year by popular demand, the historic Texas Theater. Join us for this big blues event. 15 bands over 2 days, starring the Stratoblasters, tribute to Bugs Henderson, featuring Jimmy Wallace and Junior Clark, Smoke and Joe Kubik, and Benoist King, Electric and Acoustic, Andrew Jr., Boy Jones Band, featuring Carrie LaPai, Jason Elmore, and Hoodoo Witch, the Greg A. Smith Band. Greg has a show on KNON. Aaron Burton, Texas Slim, Reverend K.M. Williams, and the Trainwreck Ensemble, Larry Lampkin, Kirby Kelly, the KNON All-Stars, with Next Generation Players, Rio Casey and Dylan Bishop, the Silvertones, Ann Armstrong, Jason Clad, Santos Puertas. Tickets are available, with more information, KNON.org. It's one of our biggest events of the year, and really a lot of fun. If you haven't been to the Blues Fest, lots of fun. Get tickets online, and they're available now. That's for January 16th, 17th. And I promise Patty and Laurent will not be singing or playing at that event.
Yes, thank God.
We have with us Aaron Morris. He's the legal director of Immigration Equality. Aaron, are you there?
I am. Good afternoon.
How are you?
Welcome.
Thank you.
Now, the reason we asked you on is we realized, I was talking to one of our local couples that we've known for years. They've been on our show lots of times. We haven't done a good immigration show in more than a year.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
But we've had a number of binational couples on. Tell us, first of all, what does Immigration Equality do?
So Immigration Equality is a national nonprofit that offers free legal services to the LGBT community. It's always sort of that nexus between immigration and LGBT rights. Mm-hmm. And so that encompasses a lot of things. Binational couples certainly have been a mainstay of what we've done. We also do a large amount of asylum work for people coming from countries where it's not safe to be LGBT.
Okay.
And they could be singles. They don't have to be couples. Right?
Some of my favorite people are single. Yeah, they can be. it doesn't matter. I mean, if you're married and one spouse gets asylum, the other spouse automatically gets asylum too. But, you know, almost by definition, if you're from a country where it's not safe to be LGBT, you probably don't have access to marriage equality.
Right. True.
Okay, so what are some of the things that over the last year have changed with marriage equality spreading across the country?
And with Windsor.
And with Windsor, right.
Well, so you probably know that before the Windsor case, the Defense of Marriage Act prevented the federal government, even if it wanted to, from recognizing same-sex couples in a marriage. And so this really meant that even when people started to marry in 2004 or, you know, abroad, even earlier than that, that they couldn't sponsor their partner for a green card. And it really put binational LGBT couples in this bizarro position where, you know, the state would recognize it, but the government wouldn't. And so they, you know, we had couples who spent thousands, if not tens of thousands of dollars to stay together. And that really boiled down to three options. Either the couple had to leave the United States and go somewhere where they could live together, and people did that. They took their whole families abroad. Or, you know, the foreign national came to the United States and started on a tourist visa, and then when that ran out, went to a student visa, tried to get a work visa. Like, it was this hoop after hoop to stay in legal status. And when that didn't work out, you know, people were put in this awful position where they kind of got stuck here with nothing. You know, unfortunately, immigration law is pretty unforgiving for people who overstay a visa. Mm-hmm. And if you've done so for more than 1 year, if you leave again, America won't let you back for 10 years. And so there were, you know, couples who were, you know, raising families, being deported, like splitting families apart. It was truly awful. Mm-hmm. And when the Defense of Marriage Act finally died, you know, we got 7,000 requests for assistance from binational couples saying, like, what do we do now? How do we fix all of this? And we, you know, we did a lot of good work to help them do that.
Okay, so I just had breakfast this morning with a friend of mine who comes to Dallas once a year on New Year's weekend for a conference that he has. For 20 years, we get together. We always say goodbye by saying same time next year. So he is from Canada. His partner is from the United States. He's been in the United States on a work visa that he gets renewed once every 3 years. He said it's been real easy. He just goes to the border, and he said it takes no time, just reapplies, gets it, comes back. And I said, but you two have been married for 10 years because they got married in Canada. You've been married 10 years. Why don't you get your green card? He said, okay, what do I do? Do I go to an immigration office? As far as I understand, it's a two-step process, isn't it? The American has to apply first, right?
Yeah, it's pretty complicated, but the simple version is there are two forms that you need. One is a request from the U.S. citizen to say, hey, I've got this relationship with a foreign-born person, could be a spouse, could be a child, and because of that relationship, they're eligible for a green card. Assuming that's granted and recognized, then the U.S. government takes step two, which is that they look at the foreign person to say, you know, do you have enough money to fend for yourself? Are you a good person? Is there any strange mm-hmm. part of your history that we might be concerned about? And assuming that's not the case, then they can ask for the green card.
Right. And now, this couple, the one who's from Canada, has been in legal status full-time. He's been here, and he's been in the United States working. Well, I've known him 20 years, and he's been here longer than that. So that should just be now just a regular standard. Takes a little bit of time, but you apply, and his husband has to request the status for the foreign national partner, and then he can apply. And it should just be a matter of formality, right?
Yeah, I mean, the formality is kind of a pain, to be frank. Mm-hmm. I mean, the foreign person has to go through a medical exam. They have to prove, you know, no previous immigration violations, no criminal history, all of that he's paid his taxes, particularly if he's been working in the U.S. So it tends to be a lot of paperwork, and mm-hmm. it's a little slow. And it's Immigration Equality's recommendation that if you can afford a lawyer, you should probably at least consult with one once.
Okay, so that is the other part of it, to consult with an attorney.
I know for those out there who don't really know much about immigration law, I think it's kind of been a misnomer that if an American person marries a foreign-born person, they're automatically a citizen. That's obviously not the case.
No, you have to have a green card or permanent residence for at least 3 years before you ask for citizenship, if you got it through marriage.
Gotcha.
Okay. So, now, somebody else here at the station asked a question. He said this couple is a straight couple. One of them was here not on legal status, came from Mexico. They had a child here in the United States after they were married here. They were married, Doc? Okay, so they're married here in the United States, never applied for any of this. The Mexican citizen went back to Mexico for a funeral and now cannot get back here.
Well, unfortunately, that's kind of the reality for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. There may be some potential, if they're married, to ask for a hardship waiver to sort of get around this 10-year bar. But in order to do that, you really have to show that there's some detriment to the U.S. citizen. And being separated from your spouse, although it may boggle the mind, is not considered a sufficient detriment.
How about being separated from your child?
Even that is probably not sufficient. But, you know, a lot of the way that lawyers help to build that sort of case is to show that either the child or the spouse have some sort of health problem or are in financial difficulty, or, you know, particularly for gay and lesbian couples, there are a lot of places where it's not reasonable to ask the U.S. citizen to go live abroad because, they, you know, it wouldn't be safe. They don't have the same access to education, health care, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I know since Windsor, it hasn't even been a full, you know, 2 years, but so you probably haven't had time to track this. But I was wondering, have you seen any differences between the number of gay couples who are getting green cards that are been accepted compared to the straight couples?
Well, again, you're right that we don't track the numbers on a national scale. I mean, I could tell you anecdotally that what we've heard is pretty good news. Both United States Citizenship and Immigration Services and the State Department have been well-trained in how to do LGBT cases, and we've certainly heard from a few outliers, like people abstaining from making a decision on a case or asking another officer because they have some moral objection to the marriage. Mm-hmm. And we're really trying hard to advocate against that being an option for an immigration officer. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, we've heard pretty good news from binational couples asking for that sort of thing.
Aaron, we need to take a quick break. Can you stick with us?
You bet.
Okay. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Patty Fink and Lauren Landis. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet, and this is Lambda Weekly. Aaron Morris from Immigration Equality is our guest. Patty, you had a question to start.
I just wanted to ask you, Aaron, I know we can't, like, put you on the spot with any specifics, that sort of thing, because that's not what you do, right?
But, well, it depends on your question, Patty, but go ahead.
But Section 3 of DOMA's gone, but Section 2 still exists. And, you know, for folks here in Texas, if you're married, you're an LGBT couple and you're married in another jurisdiction and you're living and working in Texas, does that cause a hindrance at all when you go to try to apply if you're a binational couple? Does that have any impact at all when you work with the federal government in terms of immigration? Can Texas
Right.
stop you?
Well, you know, there's some good news and bad news on that front. The first is that President Obama made quite clear that if you are married in any jurisdiction, whether it's in the U.S., outside of the U.S., in Massachusetts or New York, and you're living in a state that doesn't recognize it, the federal government will anyway.
Okay.
So really I just want to throw in there, or if you were married in one of those liberal states like Oklahoma.
You know, I'm actually from Oklahoma.
And are you? Wow.
When they announced marriage equality, I just thought, man, there are some people eating their hats.
Yes.
I guess the frustrating part that continues is that if you are living in a state, especially a state near the border, especially if you live physically near the border, it can be really hard, if not dangerous, to try to get to a marriage equality state. Mm-hmm. So we've certainly heard from couples, like in the south of Texas or in other states near the border, that they just don't feel comfortable trying to go north or east or west to get married. Mm-hmm. And that has a lot to do with the remarkable increase in the policing of the border, so that there are places in Texas where you can't take a highway to get out of, like, Brownsville without almost a 100% chance of being picked up by immigration.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, because
so until we have marriage equality in every state, that'll continue to be a problem.
Yeah. So you're really saying the problem there is people who don't have legal status are afraid of being picked up.
And it's a legitimate fear because if you're picked up at or near the border, you will be detained.
Right. Right.
But suppose you're a binational couple, say living in Dallas, and you know you're from Texas, and your spouse, where you got married, say in Vancouver, even. And your spouse is from, you know, a country outside the U.S., say in Europe, where marriage equality is in place, like Spain. Is there any way that Texas could stop you from getting a green card and becoming a citizen?
Or is that solely up to the federal government?
I am happy to say Texas can't stop you.
Yay. Yay. Okay. That's
Yay.
That's awesome.
Okay, so one other thing happened, and I want to talk about this before we get back to some other specific instances, is DACA, the Deferred Action...
For Childhood Arrivals?
Childhood Arrivals, yes, which was an executive order that happened about a year and a half ago.
Yeah, that's about right.
What's gone on? First of all, what is the order, and what's gone on with that?
So that was basically President Obama's temporary fix for millions of undocumented individuals living in the U.S. It was the recognition that, you know, it's up to Congress. It really is Congress's authority and responsibility to pass a bill that fixes the immigration problem. There are almost 11 million people living undocumented in the United States. And like I said before, they're kind of stuck here. There are so many who would love to pay a fine, pay for a visa, leave the U.S. if there was some possibility to come back. But the way it is right now, none of that's possible. And so when the president passed DACA, it really is one of the most limited forms of immigration benefits you can get. It's permission not to be deported for 2 years and work authorization. And that's about it.
So a number of those people are going to have to reapply. It's already this summer they'll have to start reapplying.
Yeah, we have some clients right now that we're helping to do just that. And, you know, more recently, just in November, December, the president passed a little bit of an extension of that bill, which removed age restrictions on who is eligible, but, you know, also put a requirement to that if you are an adult and you came to the United States voluntarily, you have to have a relationship to a U.S. citizen child or a child with a green card in order to be eligible to apply for that as an adult.
So age restrictions were taken off of it.
They were, but again, other restrictions were added. And for the LGBT community, you know, a lot of us build relationships or family relationships that aren't as, you know, traditional or conservative or maybe not even as formally recognized as heterosexual or opposite sex couples might. And so from our perspective, it left out a bunch of our community.
The reason I'm asking you about the age restrictions, we had a guest on our show, I don't know, 5 years ago, and it was right after we had an immigration march here in Dallas. And his point about immigration equality, he and his brother and sister came to the United States when they were kids and did not have legal status, but his sister had met an American. She got married. She applied for her green card and became a citizen. His brother married a woman, applied for permanent status. He had, at that point anyway, at least had his green card, but he was unable. DACA came along. I happened to see him. DACA came along. He missed the deadline by 1 month. And he had a partner who was willing to sponsor him also. But now you're saying that the age restriction was taken off since then. So it's possible, and I haven't seen him since then, it's possible that he has been able to apply.
Well, I would tell you what. Mm-hmm. Tell him to call me, and I'll go through it with him, and we'll see if there's something we can do to help.
Yeah, yeah. Because I know several people who were in that position. He missed it by like a month. There were others who missed it by a year, 2 years, but they still came here when they were 12 or 13, and you know, it was certainly not their choice to come or not come. Loved it here, but the younger they came, also, the less ability they have to go back to a country like Mexico because they simply don't even have the language skills anymore. So.
Well, and hopefully in a new Congress, maybe not the next one, but maybe the next one, there'll be some kind of comprehensive immigration reform. You know, it's something that everyone agrees must happen, regardless on the conservative or progressive scale. I think the fight is just about how to make it happen.
Well, but some real good news came out on the congressional front is that Representative Louie Gohmert said that he was going to challenge Boehner for Speaker of the House. So that could be wonderful if Gohmert is appointed Speaker of the House, because that would bring some true sanity to the House.
Right. We're so proud here in Texas, you know. Yeah. And Ted, and I'm waiting for Ted Cruz's head to explode for the eighth time or ninth time, and maybe one of them will be a permanent explosion. Mm-hmm. You know, he just gets so riled up over all of this.
We're very proud of our congressional team here.
Well, you know, there are some things that America is doing right. The asylum system in the United States is so essential to the LGBT community, mm-hmm. to keep our community safe. You know, when you think about international gay rights or LGBT rights, it can be kind of daunting how many places there are in the world that it's illegal to be gay, it's a crime to be gay, they take your children away if you're an LGBT person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the United States, one of the things that is the best part about my job and what Immigration Equality's mission is that if you're here, we want to make sure that you can stay safe here. Mm-hmm. And so we spend a lot of resources and a lot of attorneys pro bono hours to make sure that happens. And right now we have almost 500 open cases for LGBT asylees.
Huh. So 500, and what kind of, on a typical year, what percentage of your work is about asylum?
It's an enormous percentage of our work through what we have a network of lawyers throughout the United States who volunteer their time, most of which work for large law firms, but not everybody. If someone's in Texas and they want to help out in that regard, they gave $16 million in free legal services last year.
Wow.
So we have a staff of 20 people. I mean, we're quite small in that regard, but mm-hmm. we can really leverage that through this network of attorneys to help a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And, you know, as we get marriage equality in this country for all of us, I would hope that most of your work then is centered on asylum rather than our own people being treated equal under the law.
Well, it's a little bit of both. You know, we still hear horror stories from, you know, couples coming in at the border and the officer saying, I appreciate that you're married, but there's nothing I can do to help you. And it's just, they're just wrong. They just don't understand that the whole world has changed in the last 5 years.
With asylum, one of the rules that most people don't understand coming in from a country where you can be killed for being gay,
literally
and legally killed, is that they have to declare their intention for asylum within a year of coming to the United States.
That's right. There are two limited exceptions to that rule, and that's just like some big change has happened either in your life or in the world that makes it more dangerous than before. An easy way to sort of illustrate that is that, you know, it was always dangerous in the Gambia to be an LGBT person, but the president of the Gambia announced not long ago that he would behead gay people. Mm-hmm. So it was like this moment where, wow, maybe you'd lived in the U.S. for 2 or 3 years and hadn't applied, but now maybe it is time.
So if there's a new circumstance. A friend of mine who was Palestinian applied for asylum, and he didn't get asylum because he had been here 5 years at the point at which he started his case. It never occurred to him that he could apply. And he went before a judge here in Dallas that has the lowest rate nationally of all immigration judges of granting asylum. But because of his story and because of friends and family who came out to testify for him, he got, I think it's called refusal to remove?
Withholding of removal.
Withholding of removal. Explain what that is.
So asylum is a remarkable benefit. It gets you permission to stay in the United States. You get work authorization in a year. You can get a green card. It really is a pathway to citizenship that's kind of rare in the U.S. Withholding of removal isn't that. Withholding is permission to work in the U.S., freedom from being actively deported, but with the understanding if you ever leave, they won't let you back in again. But you don't get a green card. You can't sponsor relatives. You can't travel internationally. It's a pretty limited benefit, but right. At the same time, it's better than being deported to Palestine.
Yeah.
And what was ironic about this case, the judge first heard it and granted withholding, or first heard the case on the day that the Supreme Court heard Windsor, and he issued his decision on the same day that the Supreme Court announced their decision on Windsor. And as he was giving him withholding from removal, he said, with this decision that the Supreme Court just handed down, and literally had just handed it down about an hour before, he said, you might have a pathway toward a green card and citizenship through that, which he has.
To marry his partner.
So, yeah, yeah.
Well, that's
they've
great.
Since gotten married, yeah.
When someone applies for asylum because of being gay and the danger in their home country, is there any follow-up, I don't know, investigation that they really are?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a strange thing, but you do have to prove that you're LGBT.
Really?
You know, Yeah. Just, like if you were claiming to be Catholic and it was dangerous to be Catholic, they'd still make you prove it. You know, it's kind of a strange thing, but it's something we do all day, every day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, part of the problem is if you're from a country where you did everything in your power to hide the fact that you're LGBT because it wasn't safe, there's often not a paper trail, right? And mm-hmm. that's what lawyers are always looking for. So mm-hmm. we concentrate a lot on helping a person to tell their story. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of fail-safes in the asylum system to weed out fraud. And so, you know, they compare your written testimony with your oral testimony. They look at what you say compared with the country condition materials that they know is going on in, you know, Jamaica or Egypt or wherever. And they really assess the claim holistically, whether it's papers or testimony or whatever. And if they're satisfied with it, an asylum officer can grant within 2 weeks of hearing your case. If they're not, they'll refer you to court, and then it really is more like a trial.
And also, these are judges who really just hear these kinds of immigration cases, not just asylum cases, but immigration cases. So they're up on what's going on around the world. It's not like you have to start from square one with them, I would imagine.
I've had a lot of problems with immigration judges, but it was never because they weren't prepared or intelligent. They were plenty smart.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so how does somebody prove that they're gay? We carry our gay cards with us, but...
Right, but I mean, what kind of irony is that? I mean, you were just pointing that out, Aaron, about they spend all these years desperately hiding everything, and suddenly they have to prove.
Right.
They have to hide and then show, hide and then show. It's weird. That's bizarre to me.
Well, it is. And, you know, we often meet with people who are true survivors, right? They fled a country. They left everything behind. Sometimes they came with nothing but literally the clothes on their backs. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they don't even have, like, an ID document because they had to leave in the middle of the night.
Right.
And it can be a struggle. And the burden is always on the immigrant to prove that what they say is true, that it's believable and plausible, that they meet the definition that the judge expects. And it can be a real struggle sometimes, which is why it's so important to have a lawyer.
And just to be fair, you guys investigate heterosexual marriages to make sure that those aren't fraudulent also.
Well, by you guys, do you mean me?
No. I mean just immigration.
Immigration
in
judges would.
Yeah.
Non-immigration
equality. Oh, absolutely.
Equality.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and like when I was kind of kidding when I said, how do you prove that you're gay? Well, in the case of my friend who came from, he actually, I guess, was born in Saudi Arabia, but he is Palestinian. And the judge was asking him questions like, well, can't you go back to where you were born? And he said, no, I was born in Saudi Arabia, and they wouldn't take me as a, you know, I'm not a citizen there, so I can't go back. Well, can't you go back to Jordan? Well, no, because the part of Jordan that I was born is not, you know. So it was that part of it was a mess, and that contributed. But the people who came to talk for him, well, I write for Dallas Voice, the gay paper here. Why would he know these people? And so part of it, I guess, in proving that you're gay is just who your friends are. Partially.
Well, you know, and it can be hard if you've lived in a country with a really inspired internalized homophobia. Yeah. You may not feel that comfortable talking to people about being LGBT. Certainly not the government or a judge.
Sure.
Like those are the people that you would have avoided in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, we employ a lot of creative methods. Sometimes it's just like, let's talk about your Adam for Adam profile.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know,
Could you kiss your lawyer? Could you kiss your lawyer?
Say that again?
Could you kiss your lawyer in court?
You couldn't kiss this lawyer. it seems like that would be rather frowned upon.
Okay. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
But in a U.S.
I love that.
In a U.S. court, once you've been here for a while, it could just be friendships that you have, things like that, couldn't it?
It could be, but yeah. Again, you know, we really help a person to start from. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about your childhood. How did you self-identify? When did you understand? Mm-hmm. Like, how did you come out to yourself, or what was that process like? And it's a narrative that's, you know, hard to make up. Like, yeah. if it wasn't your story, mm-hmm. it's hard to tell that story.
Yeah, unless you're just a liar like Patty is.
Right.
So. So we have one more minute left. What advice do you have for somebody who is in a binational relationship, or somebody looking for asylum? Somebody looking for asylum needs an attorney.
That's yes. I mean, you don't have a right to one. There isn't access to a lot of attorneys in a lot of places. Immigration Equality's mission is to help you find one.
So contact Immigration Equality. You'll at least be able to point them in the right direction.
That's right.
Okay. So and what about a binational couple?
It's the same. You know, we have a lot of resources on our website, immigrationequality.org. We offer free legal advice. You know, we get thousands of requests every year, so I would just say be patient, but we always give some legal advice. And if nothing else, a referral to a
referral.
Attorney.
Yeah. And a binational couple really should at least speak to an attorney before they go off and start applying for these funds, filling out these forms.
That's right, because once you file them, there's no taking them back.
Right.
Yep.
And I would hope, too, that maybe listeners out there who are attorneys would volunteer their time. So
I would hope that, too. I welcome their assistance.
Aaron, I want to thank you so much for being here. The next show is trying to gear up, and they're just getting going. I want to thank you so much for being
with us.
Thanks,
Aaron.
And lots of information, and if we hear from anybody, and whenever we do an immigration show, we always do, I'll refer them on to Immigration Equality with any questions.
That's great.
Thank you so much.
Go Sooners. Happy New Year.
You too.
Right.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye. And that takes us to the end of another Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with LaRon Landis and the late Patty Fink. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly next week.